Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Zambia's acting president says he will not step down. Somalia's president nominates a new prime minister. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. Zambia's acting president Guy Scott has rejected a call by cabinet ministers to step down. Mr. Scott today issued a statement saying he will not resign because there is no provision in the Zambian constitution for such a demand. He said only he has the power to call a cabinet meeting and that unauthorized cabinet meetings constitute a serious act of treason. The acting president said he will stay in power until an election is held January 20th. Mr. Scott became Africa's first white head of state in 20 years in October when President Michael Sata died. Somalian President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed has nominated 54-year-old economist and political leader Omar Abdirashid Ali Sharmark as the country's new prime minister. He had been Somalia's ambassador to the United States. The previous premier was ousted by parliament 11 days ago amid political infighting. The new prime minister told reporters he would try to bring stability to the war-torn country and would try to pave the way toward free elections. The Associated Press reports a number of people are believed to have been killed in the collapse of a five-story building in Nairobi. Nairobi Deputy Governor Jonathan Mweke says authorities will focus on search and rescue and then investigate the cause of the collapse.
What we need to do is come up with very stringent laws to be a deterrent to this kind of things. We have a strong enforcement unit, but sometimes you can't catch everybody. There's always that one or two people who are able to sneak and do something without approvals from the county.
Deputy Governor Jonathan Mweke. This is VOA News. The AFP reports 26 men suspected of taking part in illegal homosexual activity will go on trial Sunday in Egypt. The men were arrested earlier this month at a public bath in Cairo. The owner of the establishment and four employees are among those charged with debauchery. The World Bank announced today that Zimbabwe and Zambia will get grants and loans to fix the Kariba Dam, according to an AFP report. The power-generating dam is on the border between the two countries. The $275 million in loans and grants will be used to make urgently needed repairs to the dam. The AP reports that a Kenyan policeman Tuesday shot and killed five people, including four of his colleagues, before killing himself. The policeman had blamed his colleagues for informing his wife about an extramarital affair. There has been a series of murder-suicides by policemen in the country. Reuters reports that Nigeria has lowered its expectations for economic growth next year. The finance minister predicts a growth rate of 5.5%, down from the previous prediction of 6.4%. The predictions come as oil revenues decline. Speaking to the nation today, President Barack Obama announced that the United States would open ties with Cuba. He called it a new chapter and an end to an outdated approach to Cuban relations, which were broken more than half a century ago. Mr. Obama called for a serious debate with Congress about the possibility of ending a U.S. trade embargo on Cuba and instructed Secretary of State John Kerry to review Cuba's designation as a state sponsor of terrorism. A European court has ruled that the Palestinian militant group Hamas must be removed from a European Union list of designated terrorist groups. The General Court of the European Union says the EU improperly included Hamas on the basis of information it got from the media and the Internet. The ruling is open to an appeal. The court also stressed the statement that the ruling was procedural and does not imply any substantive assessment of whether Hamas carries out actions that define it as a terrorist group. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is bitterly rejecting the court action, saying Hamas was guilty of countless war crimes and terrorist acts.
It seems that too many in Europe, on whose soil 6 million Jews were slaughtered, have learned nothing. But we in Israel, we've learned. We'll continue to defend our people and our state against the forces of terror and tyranny and hypocrisy.
Benjamin Netanyahu, Pakistan's army chief, visited Kabul today for talks with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani. They spoke on the security situation along their country's border. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Ebola continues to attack Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone on several fronts. While infections and deaths rise, the disease is posing a greater threat to food security. UN agencies warn that more than 1 million people could be food insecure by March unless action is taken now.
That's VOA's Jody Kapawa reporting. Details coming up.
Also in the news, Kenya pressures South Sudan's political leaders to agree on a peace deal.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, President Barack Obama has announced an end to the decades Washington's policy of diplomatic and economic isolation for Cuba. The United States severed diplomatic relations with Cuba in January 1961. The key elements of Mr. Obama's revised policy include reestablishing an embassy in Havana. Washington will amend regulations to allow increased support for civil society in Cuba and the free flow of information. Remittance levels will be raised from $500 to $2,000 per quarter, and support for the development of private businesses in Cuba will no longer require specific licenses. Americans traveling to Cuba will be allowed to import additional goods. Washington also will review its 1982 designation of Cuba as a state sponsor of terrorism. Earlier today, Cuba released an American civilian imprisoned 5 years ago. Alan Gross was flown back to Washington accompanied by three members of the U.S. Congress. He was released at the same time three Cubans were released from U.S. prisons.
Ebola continues to attack Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone on several fronts. While infections and deaths rise, the disease is posing a greater threat to food security. UN agencies warn that more than 1 million people could be food insecure by March unless action is taken now. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, World Food Program, and the governments of the three countries have just surveyed the food security situation. A joint statement calls for drastically improved access to food, as well as measures to safeguard both crop and livestock production. Alexander Jones is the chief of FAO's Donor Relations and Resource Mobilization.
Well, obviously, the most urgent priority of FAO and all of our UN partners is to stop the epidemic and the loss of life that's caused by it. But we also need to keep in mind that there is a need to reduce the food security impacts of this crisis, which are equally challenging. This is having both direct and indirect impacts on millions of people in the three main affected countries in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone.
The UN agencies say access to food has been blocked by border closings, quarantines, hunting bans, and transport restrictions. Livelihoods have been disrupted, and food markets have been closed for long periods. Jones says the harvesting and processing of food has either slowed or stopped in some places.
These are countries, of course, which have a very large rural agricultural sector. It's taking labor force away from these areas. Normally during harvest and other critical agricultural seasons, there's a large inflow of population from other areas. And obviously this is not happening with all the quarantines and movement limitations placed on them. So there's an absolute lack of labor force in this area.
Farm workers no longer have the salaries they did prior to the outbreak. Their lack of spending is also contributing to an economic slowdown in the countries. The FAO's Jones says farmers that are able to produce some crops are having a tough time selling them.
So we're seeing that prices in production areas are dropping and they're rising in consumption areas. So typically rural areas have less income with which to buy things they need, and urban areas are seeing price increases.
Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone have been forced to import more food and are not able to export crops to neighboring countries as they have in the past. The FAO and the Africa Solidarity Trust Fund have donated more than $3 million to food security efforts. But officials say millions of dollars more will be needed. Meanwhile, The World Food Program's Emergency Response Coordinator, Denise Brown, describes the Ebola outbreak as a wake-up call for the world. She says, while working with partners to make things better, we must be prepared for them to get worse. To make things better, UN agencies are trying to reestablish the farm system in the three countries. This includes distribution of seeds and fertilizer, better agricultural methods to help compensate for the labor shortages, and cash transfers or vouchers to allow people to buy food and help stimulate markets. Currently, it's estimated 520,000 people are severely food insecure in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. UN officials say without urgent action, that number could double by March. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Joe. Sierra Leone health officials today began a door-to-door search of homes in and around the capital, Freetown, for people infected with the Ebola virus. President Ernest Bai Koroma launched the 14-day Operation Western Area Surge in a national broadcast this morning. He said inspectors will be accompanied by security officers to ensure cooperation in neighborhoods being canvassed. Mr. Koroma said not to hide the sick. He promised that ambulances, testing labs, and treatment beds will be available for all those with Ebola symptoms. Sierra Leone has already banned Sunday trading, travel between districts, and public celebrations of Christmas and New Year's to reduce transmission of the virus. An estimated 7,000 have died of Ebola in affected countries in the past 9 months. However, infection rates have stabilized in neighboring Guinea and Liberia, and numbers in the west of Sierra Leone continue to rise. In spite of the recent spike in Sierra Leone, a U.S. expert on the epidemic predicts a drop in infections there within weeks. Dr. Tom Frieden of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention told reporters in Freetown that the weekly rise in cases in Freetown in recent weeks is similar to numbers in Monrovia 2 months ago. He said Sierra Leone can now take advantage of Liberia's experience to effectively contain the spread of the virus.
The Ebola virus has affected sports in other African countries. Morocco declined to host the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations tournament, so the organizers accepted an invitation from Equatorial Guinea. However, the 2012 Women Footballer of the Year, Genoveva Anoma, who is from Equatorial Guinea, says the tournament should be cancelled for the good of humanity and of her country. Equatorial Guinea's Deputy Sports Minister, Ruslan Aboyanga Nsu, said the government is confident that it can manage the games and prevent Ebola infections in the country. Meanwhile, an American doctor recently recovered from the Ebola virus will return to work at the Monrovia Hospital where he contracted the virus. Dr. Richard Sakra from Massachusetts General Hospital said he will return to Elwha Hospital for a 4-week tour as a volunteer doctor. The hospital is a clinic outside Monrovia that was founded by SIM, a charity in North Carolina. Medical staff of the Boston Hospital have volunteered at Elwha for 20 years.
Coming up on 14 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. East African nations are expecting South Sudan's refugee numbers to rise drastically in the coming year as more people flee violence and a deepening humanitarian crisis in the country. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports Kenya's top diplomat also says her country will keep pressure on South Sudan's political leaders to agree on a peace deal.
Humanitarian agencies say the number of South Sudanese seeking refuge in neighboring countries could rise to 821,000 people next year if a lasting peace is not achieved soon. The expected upsurge would add to more than 500,000 South Sudanese refugees already living in Ethiopia, Kenya, Sudan, and Uganda. United Nations agencies and NGOs working on the crisis launched an appeal Wednesday for more than $800 million to fund the refugee response in the host countries. The crisis in South Sudan began a year ago when a political dispute between the president and his deputy spiraled into an inter-ethnic conflict that has divided factions of the ruling party against one another. Negotiators from the warring sides are scheduled to meet in Addis Ababa this week to continue to work on a peace deal. The process has been uninspiring, as at least four past ceasefire agreements have all been violated. Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Amina Mohamed, speaking to reporters after the launch of the refugee response plan in Nairobi, said Kenya continues to have faith in the process.
So at the political level, we're doing everything that we can. And I can tell you that we've made a lot of progress, but we are not there yet. We've made progress on all the issues except for issues that relate to security and the governance structure.
Kenya is part of the IGAD group of nations mediating the talks. The group has threatened sanctions against South Sudan leaders from both sides of the conflict if they cannot abide by a lasting ceasefire deal. Meantime, Kenya is also considering a new security bill that would, among other things, cap the number of refugees allowed in Kenya at 150,000. Mohamed said she did not think the bill will have any effect on refugees in the country or the appeal for funding.
The bill is not yet through. It's just gone through its first reading in Parliament. It's still under active consideration and discussion. I don't think it has any bearing at all on the request that we've made to the international community today to support the refugees that are already in Kenya.
Kenya currently hosts more than 500,000 refugees, most of them from neighboring Somalia. Gabe Joselow, VOA News, Nairobi.
There is a lot to be angry about in South Sudan, especially among the young, far better educated generation. The youth feel alienated by the leaders who have waged a war for power at the expense of people just 2 years after independence. But to date, there has been little public protest. Analysts say that the tens of thousands of refugees and jobless have no time for taking to the streets. Their main concern is to make ends meet. Benno Muchler reports from Juba on why there is a lack of protests.
Michael Dengadwell is a refugee. He is one of about 50,000 who have sought safe haven from the fighting at a United Nations site near Bentiu, a strategic town near some of South Sudan's most important oil fields. It has changed hands many times during the year-old conflict. On a recent morning, the 26-year-old primary school teacher recounted his difficult experience.
Even me, I come here through difficulties. I spent about 5 days in the bush without drinking any water. I taste also even the urine. I drink the urine.
Deng has a lot to be angry about. He came here almost exactly 1 year ago, just about when war broke out. Since then, he says he has led a life that seems no better than that of an animal. Flies swarmed around his head while he talks sitting in a heated mud hut covered with plastic sheets. The UN camp stands on a barren field with no escape from the South Sudanese sun. Food, water and electricity are scarce. But the worst part, people say, is having nothing to do and feeling imprisoned because outside the camp it's too dangerous. Asked why no one protests against their elected leaders who are responsible for this situation, Deng had this to say.
The problem is that Africa, and I can say Africa in general, is different from Europe, is different from USA, is different from other continents. In South Sudan here, we say that South Sudan, we use democratic system. And that one, it remains in the books. If you make a protest now, you can be killed.
Soldiers and guns are omnipresent. The government is mostly made up of former guerrillas, with no room for outsiders who did not physically fight for independence that became reality 3 years ago. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement Party rules the country with an iron fist. In the history of many countries, it was often a student movement that began a struggle for change. But following ethnic clashes between students at Juba University 2 years ago, the school administration banned student associations. Outside the university, medical student David Tut Ali said they fear to openly speak their minds.
And it's very difficult to express our feelings. They just talk of freedom, of which freedom is not in place, it is not in action.
Many students shared his opinion but feared sharing their names because of South Sudan's security service. After three more student interviews, a man in plain clothes approached, insisted in Arabic to follow him to a police station, and took my journalistic accreditation. I asked a nearby soldier to be my translator and follow me as a backup. After a 5-minute walk, the plainclothes officer relented and then told me to report to him the next day. Deng Atuay Mawir, one of South Sudan's most outspoken government critics, knows all too well the risks for activists. As the head of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, he has challenged the government of President Salva Kiir and his former deputy-turned-rebel Riek Machar many times. 2 years ago, he was kidnapped. And just a few weeks ago, he says an unknown gunman almost killed him on the street.
I start the car. Somebody came out on the other right on the side, and he shot. I heard the bullet tell. He broken the both windows, and he missed me here. And then from there, I just came out. The second shooting shot me from here.
Today, Deng Atwaima Weir lives in a secured hotel of a friend that he seldom leaves. But he doesn't want to go in exile. He said South Sudan is his country, and he wants to correct the difficult situation that his people are in. Benno Müchler for VOA News, Juba.
Minutes past the hour. This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission says it's concerned that some of the more than 1.5 million people displaced by 5 years of violence in northern Nigeria may not be able to vote for the president in February. A spokesman says language in the nation's Electoral Act concerning residency must be changed to validate the ballots of those who've been displaced by attacks by Boko Haram and other violence. The election commissioners are distributing registration cards to internally displaced Nigerians who are living in camps and at other locations. They are also preparing for armed security at election places.
The office of Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete has announced the resignation of the country's Attorney General. It follows an investigation of alleged corruption by members of the president's cabinet and other senior officials. Attorney General Frederick Warema has denied any wrongdoing. A parliamentary watchdog committee reports money was taken from a $120 million escrow account that was set up to pay an energy firm. It says money went to some government ministers and that Warema allegedly authorized the transaction. Members of the ruling party in parliament also have called for the resignations of Prime Minister Mizengo Pinda, the Minister of Energy and Minerals, and other senior officials. Japan, Britain, the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and eight other donors have withheld an estimated $500 million in loans and grants pending action by the government.
Poor countries lose a lot more money each year from corruption and corporate tax evasion than they receive in foreign aid. A new report calls the losses a structural cause of extreme poverty. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The nonprofit research organization Global Financial Integrity says developing nations lost $6.6 trillion between 2003 and 2012. Eric LeCompte, head of the Jubilee USA Network, says it's a problem growing by nearly 9.5% each year.
Illicit financial flows refers to the amount of money that leaves countries that's untaxed. In general, that money is anything that ranges from tax evasion to monies that are leaving through corrupt practices. And because of the types of money and because many countries don't have protections in place, countries around the world are losing annually almost $1 trillion due to illicit financial flows.
The GFI report says a record $991 billion was lost to illicit financial flows in 2012 alone. Jubilee USA Network is a coalition of 75 U.S. organizations, 400 faith-based communities, and 50 international partners. It lobbies for global financial reforms to bring debt relief to poor countries. It works with GFI to propose reforms to end illicit financial flows. LeCompte says despite ongoing efforts and statements by G7 and G20 nations, the problem persists.
Around the world, many policymakers and decision makers are still learning about this reality that $1 trillion is leaving countries untaxed. And although there's movement, there still needs to be a lot of education around the issue. And I think for the first time, we're looking at processes where we could actually start to curb this kind of illicit money.
The report compares the illicit outflow of money to the inflow of aid dollars.
The amount of money that is leaving some of the poorest countries in the world is 11 times the amount of aid they receive.
The Jubilee USA executive director says illicit financial flows are making a bad situation worse in Ebola-stricken West Africa.
The three countries that have been affected and hit hardest, Sierra Leone, Guinea, Liberia, currently are losing $1.3 billion a year to illicit financial flows. That dwarfs what is, for these countries, a budget that is less than $300 million to deal with health issues. When this money leaves, it's not addressing some of the important infrastructure concerns in the developing world.
And LeCompte says even some prominent G20 countries are being affected.
In terms of the recent report by Global Financial Integrity, the top five countries around the world losing money to illicit flows between 2003 and 2012 were China, Russia, Mexico, India, and Malaysia.
So if all that money is coming out of the developing world, where is it going?
We don't totally know who is benefiting. We know that it's a whole range of actors.
He says those that could benefit from illicit financial flows include the extraction industries and banks.
Essentially, 80% of all illicit financial flows are caused through a process called trade misinvoicing, where money is sent out, capital is sent out of the country. When materials leave the developing world, they're not being taxed properly for the actual value of cargo that's leaving.
LeCompte says it's a problem that can be solved, for example, by ensuring customs authorities know the true price of goods. GFI estimates it would cost each country a one-time charge of $2 million to establish such a mechanism.
If this process was put in place, it would literally generate billions of dollars for some of the world's poorest economies every year.
Jubilee USA and its partners will push for financial transparency mechanisms at next July's International Conference on Financing for Development in Addis Ababa. They'll also lobby to make them part of the Sustainable Development Goals, which build upon the expiring Millennium Development Goals. If successful, they say, developing countries would have billions of dollars more each year to invest in health, infrastructure, and education. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.